in various city buildings across Odessa. These works should reflect the artist's impression of West Texas. The works will also be included in an exhibit catalog and printed on a specialty playing card deck to be sold by local merchants. Deadline to apply is May 31st. To apply, visit tinyurl.com/5fkatrzw.
The Permian Basin is currently experiencing an unprecedented slowdown because of lower demand and an escalation in foreign production of oil. To keep current, we bring you the weekly Business and Oil Report. Each week, Recording Library volunteers and staff read the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American Business and Oil pages. Friday mornings at 6 and repeated Sunday nights at 7 and Thursdays at 4 a.m. on Recording Library of West Texas Radio. Read by listening.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 58 and mostly cloudy. Tonight it will be cloudy with a low in the upper 50s. Then, tomorrow, a few showers with a high in the low 80s. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low in the mid-50s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 1 p.m.
This program is made available to the IAAIS program share and was recorded at the audio reading service of the Ellen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana, for people with print impairments.
Welcome. This is Prevention, and I'm your reader, Adrian Booker, with the audio reading service at the Ellen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Today I'll be reading from Prevention Magazine's May 2021 issue. And now, I'll begin with an article in Prevention's health section entitled, In It for the Long Haul, by Jenny Graves. While it is true that most people recover from COVID-19, a growing number continue to experience debilitating symptoms months after the onset of their infections. Scientists are racing to find out why post-COVID syndrome happens and what we can do about it. Last spring, as New York City hospitals were beginning to get a handle on the first onslaught of COVID-19 cases, doctors at Mount Sinai Health System noticed something unusual. Some COVID-19 patients were still experiencing symptoms weeks after their initial infections had passed. They had issues like fatigue, brain fog, chest pain, shortness of breath, racing hearts, GI symptoms, and anxiety and depression, says Joan Bosco, MD, an internal medicine doctor at Mount Sinai. It was surprising because some of the least sick patients initially wound up being the sickest down the road. Today, we call them long haulers, people who suffer from a range of puzzling symptoms after a bout with the novel coronavirus, many for months on end. While some studies state that only patients who have had lingering symptoms for 12 weeks or more qualify as having post-COVID syndrome, PCS. Many experts say anyone who has persistent symptoms 4 weeks after a COVID-19 infection should talk to a doctor. With the pandemic still not under control at the time of this writing, tens of thousands may be joining the ranks of those with PCS every month. The many faces of PCS. Estimates of how many COVID-19 patients go on to develop post-COVID syndrome vary from 2% to 25% or more. Interestingly, PCS seems to affect more middle-aged adults than older ones, but as yet no one knows for certain why PCS happens or who is most likely to experience it. That doesn't mean it's not real, says Laurie Jacobs, MD, an internist at the COVID Recovery Center at Hackensack Meridian Health in New Jersey. Many of my post-COVID patients say their primary care doctors dismissed and disregarded their symptoms, which compounds their suffering. Shana Zweibach, 27, of East Meadow, New York, was one such patient. She fell ill with COVID-19 in March 2020. After recovering from her initial infection, she felt better for a couple of months, but then her health began to deteriorate rapidly. "First, I developed extreme fatigue and brain fog," Zweibach said. "I'd forget what I was talking about in the middle of a conversation. I had trouble distinguishing between letters and numbers, and it took me a day to recover my energy from a walk down the block or a trip to the grocery store." She also had serious shortness of breath. "It felt like air hunger," she recalls. Prior to the pandemic, Zweibach had suffered from depression, which was exacerbated by her physical health issues. "Before she was treated at Mount Sinai in August, everyone told me my depression was the cause of my post-COVID symptoms," she says. "They made me feel like my illness was my fault. Now she knows it's that her physical symptoms are worsening her mental health, not the other way around." Mount Sinai launched the first multidisciplinary post-COVID clinic last May to treat long haulers and learn what works to help them. Now it can barely keep up with demand, and dozens of similar clinics and treatment programs have popped up across the country. What may be going on? SARS-CoV-2, the novel coronavirus, isn't the first virus to cause lasting symptoms, says Greg Vanich-Kachorn, MD, Medical Director of Mayo Clinic's COVID Activity Rehabilitation Program. Previous viral outbreaks like SARS and MERS left some people debilitated for months, sometimes years, he says. The virus isn't still alive and active in people with ongoing symptoms, but it triggers a response in the body that causes these persistent symptoms. Now we're trying to figure out what that response is, and we have some likely suspects. These are excess inflammation. The leading candidate is immune system-related inflammation. "We see high levels of inflammation in many of our post-COVID patients," says Christian Sandrock, MD, a specialist in emerging infectious diseases at UC Davis Health in California, who is treating patients at its post-COVID-19 clinic. In fact, when researchers in Europe did MRIs of the hearts of 100 people who had recently recovered from COVID-19, they found that 60% had ongoing heart inflammation, which can cause some of the symptoms many long haulers report, such as shortness of breath, chest pain, and elevated heart rate with exertion. What's more, that inflammation affected people regardless of their pre-existing conditions or how sick they were when they initially had the virus. An autoimmune response. For some long haulers, COVID-19 might have triggered their immune systems to mistakenly target their body's healthy tissue instead of the virus, says Dr. Vanich-Kachorn. This is called an autoimmune response. Researchers at Yale University recently found that COVID-19 patients had large numbers of autoantibodies, immune molecules that attack healthy tissue, compared with people without the virus. An autoimmune disease such as lupus and rheumatoid arthritis commonly cause fatigue and digestive issues, two typical post-COVID symptoms. It may be that the same mechanisms behind those conditions are causing these symptoms in people with PCS. Problems with the nervous system. Many PCS patients show symptoms of dysautonomia, which refers to a dysregulation of the autonomic nervous system responsible for the involuntary functions like blood pressure, heart rate, breathing, and digestion. Dysautonomia affects blood flow, including blood flow to the brain, so it can cause fatigue, headaches, brain fog, and exercise intolerance, says Dr. Vanich-Kachorn. When we test patients with post-COVID syndrome, they often have some autonomic dysfunction, so it's probably a piece of the puzzle, at least for some people. Blood clots and blood vessel damage. Tiny blood clots could be playing a role too. Many PCS patients have high levels of a protein in the blood that indicates that their blood is more prone to clotting. When we put them on medication to prevent clotting, they feel better, says Dr. Sandrock. The likely reason COVID-19 patients frequently develop blood clots. The virus can infect and damage the cells lining the blood vessels, says William W. Lee, MD, medical director of the Angiogenesis Foundation and one author of a recent COVID-19 study. This lining is ordinarily smooth and slippery, like an ice rink, says Dr. Lee, which allows blood to flow easily. But when the endothelial cells lining the vessels become damaged, they get sticky, which causes platelets in the blood to adhere to the vessel wall, forming clots. We've now examined tissue from people who died of COVID-19 and found widespread clots everywhere there were infected blood vessels, in the lungs, brain, heart, kidney, and other organs, says Dr. Lee. These tiny blood clots interrupt normal blood flow and damage organs. When they occur in the lungs, they can cause shortness of breath. Microclots in the heart may contribute to palpitations. Damage to these cells lining the blood vessels has also been found in the brains and hearts of people with COVID-19 and may contribute to brain fog and cardiac damage, Dr. Lee adds. So many symptoms. Since starting at the Mount Sinai Clinic, Zweibach has seen 8 specialists, from a cardiologist to a gastroenterologist. She's had MRIs, CT scans, and blood tests, which revealed high levels of inflammation. The goal of treatment, says Dr. Bosco, is to identify underlying problems, get patients' symptoms under control, and slowly improve their ability to function. Zweibach is being treated for migraines, muscle pain, reflux, vitamin deficiencies, panic attacks, and postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, a blood circulation disorder that makes her heart rate skyrocket when she walks. All those problems set in after her bout with COVID-19. Doctors are also helping Zweibach cope with her pre-existing depression. For many patients, however, mental health issues appear after a COVID-19 infection, according to a November study published in The Lancet Psychiatry. Anxiety and difficulty sleeping are among the top 10 most common symptoms, according to a survey of more than 1,500 long haulers conducted by the Indiana University School of Medicine and Survivor Corps, a grassroots coalition of COVID-19 survivors. Members of the Corps track their symptoms and raise money for research in the hope of finding a cure. How to protect yourself? PCS is challenging, Dr. Vinich Kachorn says, but most patients have multiple symptoms. The Survivor Corps survey identified 98 possible ones. Dozens of studies of long haulers are underway worldwide that will one day provide answers. We're essentially building the plane while we're flying it, says Dr. Vinich Kachorn. Without clear answers right now, doctors who treat PCS say the best way to protect yourself is not to get COVID-19 in the first place. This isn't just the flu, says Dr. Bosco. People need to understand that there can be long-term consequences from a COVID-19 infection and take all the precautions, including wearing a mask, washing hands, and social distancing. If you do get COVID-19, take plenty of time before jumping back into regular activities. We know from SARS and chronic fatigue syndrome that if you push too hard, you experience a setback, Dr. Vinich Kachorn says. Some of his PCS patients were marathon runners. Now they count it as a victory to walk across the bedroom without feeling breathless. Recovery is slower than people would like, but we're seeing gradual improvement in most patients. Zweibach acknowledges that the slow progress can be frustrating. But as with everything else about this pandemic, she's taking it one day at a time, avoiding stress, eating regular and healthy meals, and staying hydrated. I've been sick for 13 months, and I'm probably 65% recovered, she says. If I've learned one thing, it's that I have to pay attention to my body, rest when I'm feeling tired, and be patient. Find a post-COVID clinic. If you or a loved one develops PCS, visit SurvivorCorps.com, PCCC, to find a specialized treatment facility. If you don't see one nearby, check with local universities and hospitals, as new ones are opening every month. I'll now be reading an article in Prevention Science section entitled, Does It Work? Dental Gadgets, by Stephanie Anderson Whitmer. Keeping your mouth in tip-top shape isn't just about polishing your smile. Practicing good oral hygiene might also lower your risk of serious health conditions. Advanced gum disease, for example, is linked to stroke, cardiovascular disease, and pneumonia. We can't take shortcuts on the basics, like brushing teeth twice a day and seeing a dentist regularly, says Ruchi Sahota, DDS, a family dentist and a consumer advisor for the American Dental Association, ADA. Still, plenty of products claim to keep teeth healthy with less effort. Which ones work and which are just mouthing off? Flossing devices. What they are. Interdental cleaners that shoot water or mouthwash between teeth, like floss without the string. What we know. Cleaning between teeth at least once a day is crucial for preventing bacteria-filled plaque from settling between teeth, Sahota says. Research on the devices is primarily manufacturer-funded, but most of it has found that these work as well as string floss. Some have even been awarded the ADA seal of approval. Should you try them? Yes, especially if you have dexterity issues or dental appliances like braces that make using string floss difficult, says Ada Cooper, DDS, a dentist and a spokesperson for the ADA. The best interdental cleaner is one you'll use every day, she adds. So if water is easier for you than floss, it's well worth the cost. Brands to try. Waterpik cordless water flossers, $40 to $100, waterpik.com. Burst water flosser, $70 to $80, burstoralcare.com. Tongue scrapers, what they are. Loop or U-shaped tools, often metal, used to manually remove buildup from the tongue. What we know. There's no evidence that scraping the tongue improves chronic bad breath, halitosis, Cooper says. In fact, bad breath bacteria can grow back just as fast as you remove it. Halitosis is often caused by dental issues or ailments unrelated to the tongue. A dentist can determine its real cause. Should you try them? Sure. As an addition to your regimen, but not as a substitute for regular brushing, flossing, and checkups. It's not going to harm the mouth, but it's not necessarily going to be effective either, Cooper says. Brands to try. Dr. Tongue's Stainless Steel Tongue Cleaner, $7.50, drtongues.com. The Dirt Copper Tongue Scraper, $7, givemethedirt.com. Wearable toothbrushes, what they are. Hands-free devices worn like mouth guards that use foaming toothpaste vibrations and tiny bristles. Some have blue and red LEDs that are said to kill bacteria and reduce gum inflammation. What we know. Because they're so new, research is scant and not very promising. A 2020 study found one wearable toothbrush brand so ineffective as to be not significantly different from no brushing. No study has found the LED lights to have therapeutic value for oral health. Should you try them? Nope. neither expert is convinced that they'll clean the teeth thoroughly or even fit properly, as every mouth is different. It's better to use a good electric toothbrush or even an old-fashioned manual one. I'll now be reading an article from Prevention's food section entitled Nutrition, Eating for Energy by Stephanie Anderson Whitmer. Chugging coffee number 4 or ransacking the pantry to deal with the 3 p.m. snack attack, whatever your afternoon power-up is, we all need something to get through those late hours of the day. But guzzling caffeine or snarfing sweets provides only a quick jolt of energy. Long-lasting zip is achieved with lots of fresh fruits and veggies, whole grains, healthy fats, and protein, which combine to provide the nutrients your body needs for energy as well as the digestion support to help your body use them properly. Consistency with meal timing is important to ensure that energy stores are constantly filled, says Yazi Ansari, MS, RDN, a spokesperson for the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. Try to eat meals and snacks 3 to 4 hours apart to help maintain your energy throughout the day. And when you do start to drag, use these foods to build a snack. Bananas. Bananas are energy superstars. They have potassium, magnesium, vitamin B6, fiber, and complex carbs, which all contribute to energy production in abundance. The fruits also contain these forms of natural sugar, glucose, fructose, and sucrose, and each is absorbed at a different rate, meaning you get spread out energy. Grilled maple bananas. Heat grill to medium high, halve bananas lengthwise, peels on, and then place on grill. Cut sides down, cook until slightly charred, 2 minutes. Flip, drizzle with maple syrup, and grill until peel begins to separate from the fruit, 2 to 3 minutes more. Sprinkle with chopped toasted pecans and cinnamon. Cottage cheese. 1 cup of this old favorite provides nearly 25 grams of protein, which fills you up and helps prevent energy sources like glucose from being absorbed too fast. That's how you get lasting energy and no quick crash. Marinated tomato bruschetta. Toss 1 pint grape tomatoes, sliced, with 1 tablespoon oil, a pinch each of salt and pepper, and 1 scallion, thinly sliced. Let sit at least 5 minutes, then toss with mint or basil, spread cottage cheese on whole grain toast, and spoon tomato mixture on top. Strawberries. They may seem too sweet to be powerful, but strawberries pack a serious punch. They're high in vitamin C, which studies suggest may help ward off fatigue, and they've got lots of fiber, thanks to all those teeny seeds, which help slow the digestion of their energy supply sugar. Strawberry frozen yogurt. In a food processor, puree 2.5 cups frozen strawberries, 1/2 cup plain Greek yogurt, 2 tablespoons honey, and 1 tablespoon lemon juice until smooth and thick. Eat immediately or freeze for up to 2 weeks. Nutritional yeast. A staple of predominantly plant-based diets, Nutch adds more than just a sprinkling of cheese-like flavor. Those golden flakes are full of B vitamins, and vitamin B12 in particular is required for energy metabolism, the process of turning nutrients you consume into fuel. Cheesy spiced popcorn. Finely grind 2.5 tablespoons nutritional yeast and 1/2 teaspoon each Alpo pepper and salt. Pop 1/2 cup popcorn kernels, immediately toss with olive oil and spice mix to coat. I'll now be reading an article in Prevention's Pulse section entitled, Science Says, Take a Nap. Afternoon siestas are good for more than a pick-me-up. They may help keep you sharp. Adults who napped regularly performed better on dementia screening tests that measured things like memory, attention span, locational awareness, and verbal fluency, according to a study by Chinese researchers in the journal General Psychiatry. Napping may benefit the mind because it compensates for not getting enough shut-eye at night. On average, study participants slept 6.5 hours each night, which is less than sleep experts recommend. Sleep helps the body regulate its inflammatory response, and chronic inflammation is linked to cognitive troubles over time. Well, that's all the time we have for today. This has been Adrian Booker with Prevention. I hope you've enjoyed today's reading from the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
This is a Recording Library of West Texas Community Update.
The City of Odessa Community Development Department is offering lawn mowing and roof repairing assistance for residents who meet income and age guidelines. To qualify for lawn mowing assistance, a person must reside within Odessa city limits, everyone in the household must be at least 65 years old or disabled, and be the homeowner. Residents must also have a total household income that does not exceed HUD low income limits. To qualify for the city's roof repair program, an applicant must reside within the city of Odessa, own the home in which they reside, and must be clear of any liens. Property taxes must have a balance of $150 or less. To qualify, a total household income cannot exceed HUD low income limits. For more information, contact the city's Community Development Department at 432-335-4820.
Saturday mornings, we bring you a variety of exciting publications and shows, beginning at 9 with Armed Forces News on Military Times, at 10 a.m. Sports Illustrated, at 11 o'clock, The Outdoor Show with readings from outdoor magazines, and at 12 noon, The Blind Handyman, Saturdays on Recording Library of West Texas Radio.
To bring us up to time for our next regularly scheduled program, we now bring you the following informative feature.
Should I risk taking the shingles shot to your good health for Wednesday? Dear Dr. Roach, I have some severe allergies to medicines and an allergy to eggs. Should I risk taking the shingles shot? Dr. Roach writes, the flu vaccine is usually made with egg-based culture, but since it is so highly purified, it is still safe for people with egg allergies. The shingles, pneumonia, and available COVID-19 vaccines do not use eggs and are safe. I'm not sure what you mean by severe allergies. The vast majority of people with drug allergies will be able to take all the available vaccines without problem. It is certainly appropriate to discuss any vaccine with your doctor. The COVID-19 vaccines, in particular, have had some episodes of allergic reactions in people with a history of anaphylaxis, and extra caution is warranted. The shingles vaccine series of 2 shots is a highly effective treatment to prevent getting shingles. Readers may write Dr. Keith Roach at P.O. Box 536475, Orlando, Florida, 32853-6475.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 59 and mostly cloudy. Tonight it will be cloudy with a low in the upper 50s. Then, tomorrow, a few showers with a high in the low 80s. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low in the mid-50s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
Hello and welcome to our program. My name is Penae McBride and I will be reading Women's Health here on Sight into Sound Radio. The first article today comes from Women's Health Magazine, the May 2021 issue. The Sleep Sweet Spot. You're not imagining it. The ability to fall asleep is more elusive than ever. Experts agree to the rescue an updated bedtime routine that will radically alter your connection with sleep and help you nod off fast. I've been a chronic insomniac since my mid-20s. It started in grad school when, despite my efforts to maintain Gold Star sleep hygiene, I'd go several nights in a row, getting far below the recommended minimum. And yet, somehow, I'd remain functional the following days, says Stephanie Farrington. Now in my mid-40s, amid the most harrowing viral menace since 1918, my inability to sleep has reached new levels due to, well, you can guess, while there's nothing lonelier than not being able to join in when everyone else settles down for the night, I find a twisted solace in the fact that I'm not alone, especially now. Pre-COVID, the CDC identified sleep deprivation as a threat to national health. With a third of the United States adults failing to get the suggested number of hours per night, and the difficulties many are suffering due to the health crisis, financial precariousness, loss of child care, have made sleep even more elusive. Search queries related to insomnia increased by 58% in the United States during the first 5 months of 2020, compared with the same months from the previous 3 years. And 36% of adults reported having sleep difficulties, per a Kaiser Family Foundation poll. For people of color who suffer from sleep health issues at greater rates than white populations, studies suggest getting shut-eye has been doubly challenging due to racial injustice and the virus's disproportionate impact on Black and Latinx people, says Dania A. Johnson, Ph.D., an assistant professor at the Rollins School of Public Health at Emory University. This is all to say we're in desperate need of more effective ways of going to bed. Contrary to what you've heard, better sleep ultimately comes down to changing how you think about it. Enter the new sleep rules, which apply not only to insomniacs, but to anyone who struggles in anxious times. The 7-hour directive isn't one size fits all. The charge to get 7 to 8 hours amplifies anxiety around sleep. I often find the messaging about sleep irksome, says Boris Dubrovsky, Ph.D., Associate Director of the Center for Sleep Disorders at New York Presbyterian Brooklyn Methodist Hospital in New York City. People need to allocate proper hours for sleep, yes, but there's a distinction between sleep deprivation and insomnia. With sleep deprivation, a person has the capacity to sleep, but is skimping on it to accommodate external factors, like a work deadline, he says. Clinical insomnia is different. A person has ample opportunity to sleep, but can't. Telling people to get 7 to 8 hours has a destructive effect, Dubrovsky says. It makes their situation worse because they go to bed and worry, I'm not going to get that amount, and I'll suffer the consequences. Matthew Eben, Ph.D., an associate professor of psychology and clinical neurology at Weill Cornell Medicine and New York Presbyterian Center for Sleep Medicine adds, although on average people need 7 to 8 hours, for an individual that means nothing. He likens imposing a sleep standard on everyone to advising people to purchase average-sized shoes rather than ones that actually fit their feet. Some people are going to need more or less than that magic number. The truth, liberating yourself of this notion can help alleviate the worries keeping you up and help you find your rest, happy place. Try sleeping with no external pressure, like your alarm clock, the next time you have a week off, and head to bed as soon as you feel sleepy at night, Dabrowski says. The pattern that sleep naturally settles into is usually indicative of the amount you need. Lean into the wide-eyed community. Iconic writer Fran Lebowitz has said, I haven't slept since I was 17. And comedian Amy Poehler confessed, a good night's sleep is my white whale. I truly suffer at night. Connecting with people who share the problem, be it a virtual insomnia-focused group, therapy, or just by reading other accounts on Instagram, can be healing. Patients who receive group therapy treatment for insomnia benefited from hearing one another's struggles, according to research. Remind yourself, 10 to 15% of the population is afflicted with chronic insomnia, and many of your neighbors are awake too, suggests Judith Davidson, PhD, a clinical psychologist and sleep researcher in Ontario, Canada. It helps normalize it. Head to bed with relaxation, not sleep, as the goal. This is one of the few instances in life where taking your eyes off the prize is more likely to bring success. It's sort of like happiness, says Davidson. You can chase it with a lot of energy, but it usually finds us when we're not looking for it. Drawing from an ACT, Acceptance and Commitment Therapy model for treatment, Nicole Moshfegh, PhD, a clinical psychologist in Los Angeles, and author of The Book of Sleep, advises building positive associations with your bed by partaking enjoyable but calming activities, like reading, cuddling a pet or your partner, or listening to a favorite podcast. The idea is that creating rituals and recasting the space as one where you decompress and do something you love will increase your odds of eventually conking out. Moshfegh also recommends creating the standard optimal conditions for sleep. A quiet, dark, cool 65 degrees room without any distractions, such as your smartphone. And once you're ready for lights out, lie there quietly, keep your eyes open, and try to mentally resist falling asleep, she says, even if this seems counterintuitive. What happens when people do that is they fall asleep much faster. And if you still can't nod off after a while, get out of bed. Yes, you heard that right. Change rooms and do one of those relaxing activities again, but keep it non-stimulating, like listening to a chill audiobook or skimming that new Coffee maker manual. Riveting, we know, but it works. Until you're sleepy. Leaving the bed is critical. You don't want to create negative associations with it, Dubrovsky says. Got it. This tried-and-true secret works wonders. A classic way to avoid a night of rambunctious thoughts is to anchor any next day or sleep-related concerns on paper right before going to bed. Writing down your to-do list for the next day, for example, reduces the likelihood of worry and increases your chances of restful sleep, says Chandra L. Jackson, Ph.D., a lead investigator at the NIH's National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences. And keep a notebook and pen beside your bed to jot down jitters in the middle of the night. Putting fear-based contemplations on paper helps to dissipate them instantly. Good night, world. And also from Women's Health Magazine, Flower Power. Raise your hand if you took up baking recently. So, everyone. Well, it's time to step up your game with flour alternatives that pack loads of nutrients. These flour substitutes are just as worthy of pantry space as the classic all-purpose stuff. Quinoa flour. Chances are you already know how nutritious this grain is. It's one of the few plant-based complete proteins, and the flour version is no different. Try using half all-purpose flour and half quinoa flour to ease into it. Or, with baked desserts, go all the way and substitute it completely. Green banana flour. Before you ask, no, it won't make your breads and cakes taste like bananas. That much. It's made from ground green banana skins and flesh that have a lower sugar content than the riper kind, and the banana-y taste is minimized during the cooking process. Grab that soluble flour, which is clutch for digestion, and switch it with this one. Potassium Perfection. A cup of this flour has 99% of your daily needs. Oat flour. Made from ground oats, this flour has the same benefits as your morning bowl. We're talking tons of heart-healthy fiber and anti-inflammatory beta-glucans that help you feel fuller longer and show your gut some love. Just swap in 1 1/3 cup of it for every 1 cup of regular flour. Manganese Magic. Oat powder is full of the brain-healthy mineral. White rice flour. Gluten-free people, we've got you. This is also what you can thank for your 5 rice noodles and mochi. Next time you whip up a batch of pancakes, replace 1 cup of all-purpose with 7/8 cup of white rice flour for added magnesium on your plate. You're listening to Women's Health on Sight Into Sound Radio. You can listen to Sight Into Sound on one of our specially tuned radios, channel 8.5 on TV, streaming on your computer or smartphone, as well as Amazon Alexa and Google Home devices. You can also listen at your convenience on our archives page at sightintosound.org. We are Sight Into Sound Radio since 1967. And now some articles from the May 2021 issue of Prevention magazine. Meet your feet. Take a load off and learn how to help them walk you through all you do. By Adele Jackson Gibson. Number one, all them bones. Your feet are so complex, they account for nearly a quarter of the bones in your body. Each foot is made up of 26 bones that form 30 joints and has more than 100 muscles, ligaments, and tendons. This intricate design gives your feet flexibility and stability. The three major sections of the foot are the forefoot, comprising your toes, and the long bones called metatarsals, responsible for pushing off and landing. The arch, which acts like a shock absorber, and the hind foot, which includes your heel and the talus, the bone that allows your ankle to flex, extend, and pivot. All this machinery gives you the mobility and strength to walk, run, jump, and find your balance. 2. Finding your fit. One of the keys to happy feet is wearing the right support to maintain an even footing. This could mean finding the perfect shoes, inserts, or other accessories. But don't shop at just any shoe retailer, says Alan Bass, DPM, a board-certified podiatrist and a spokesman for the American Podiatric Medical Association. You might need a prescription orthotic to solve your issue. Otherwise, your doctor can suggest a store where experts know how to fit you with proper gear. The reason it's so important is that the average American walks 75,000 miles by the time they're 50. That's a lot of pounding, making our feet susceptible to overuse injuries. The type of pain you may experience is largely influenced by your foot type. If you're more flat-footed, your ankles may roll too far inward, putting excess pressure on the insides of your feet. This can lead to chronic hip and knee pain, as well as bunions, bumps that form at the base of the big toes. If you have high arches, the opposite happens. Most of your weight shifts to the outside of your feet and onto your pinky toes, leaving you more prone to ankle sprains and foot stress fractures. Anyone can fall prey to heel pain, which is called plantar fasciitis, which occurs when the thick band of tissue connecting the heel to the toes becomes inflamed. So shop wisely. 3. Step lightly. Since our feet spend most of their time on the ground, they're exposed to a world of microbes that can lead to conditions such as athlete's foot, a fungal infection that causes a scaly rash to flare up around the toes. The fungi responsible for this issue typically hang out in moist environments, such as gyms and sweaty socks, and they can creep into your toenails and cause nail fungus. To prevent infection, keep your feet clean, dry, and well-groomed. Avoid applying lotion between your toes and cut your nails straight across. Trimming them on a slant increases the risk of ingrown toenails. If you live with diabetes, pay particular attention to your foot health. Nerve damage can mean you might not notice wounds on your feet, and poor blood flow makes it harder for your skin to heal. In the worst cases, Infections can lead to the need for amputation, so have regular checkups with a foot doctor to ensure proper care. And also from Prevention Magazine, get up and stretch it out. We've all been spending a bit more time than before on our bums, and sitting for long periods can lead to stiff muscles, back pain, and poor posture when you do stand up. Loosen up with these feel better moves from Chad Walding, DPT, a physical therapist and co-founder of Native Path. Slouch over correct. It sounds counterintuitive, but hear us out. Sit upright and imagine that a string is pulling your head and chest up, up, up. Then slouch your body all the way forward before sitting back up as tall as you can. Flexing your back and looking up toward the ceiling. This exaggerated overcorrection helps you stretch out back muscles along the spine and improve posture. Standing wide stretch. This will elongate you from head to toe, promoting flexibility and good posture. Stand up straight and clasp your hands above your head. In one movement, stretch your body so you're leaning over to one side. Pump your arms. Trace the ceiling as you straighten and bend toward the other side of your body, pumping your arms again. All over contractions. Consciously contracting and releasing muscles can help you stand straighter and work out the muscles that stabilize you when sitting and standing, such as the glutes and the core. Firmly stand with your feet hip-width apart. Squeeze your glutes and brace your core. Then clasp your hands in front of your chest, elbows back. Squeeze everything as hard as you can. Then slowly relax until you're contracting only a bit. This slight contraction helps you feel better and aligns your body, says Walding. Problem solved. Adult acne. Just when you thought your pimple-popping days were over, yikes, you wake up with an angry red splotch on your chin. Good morning, you've got adult acne. Blemishes arise when oil and dead skin cells clog your pores. Fluctuating hormones can also stimulate oil glands and cause flare-ups, which is why women often experience acne linked to menstruation, pregnancy, and menopause. And stress can trigger outbreaks in both men and women. We're seeing even more acne during the pandemic due to stress and from wearing masks, says Susan Masick, MD, an associate professor of dermatology at The Ohio State University College of Medicine. Keep wearing those masks and take these steps to find clear skin. Prevent it. Manage masks. Protective face masks can be incubators for acne or make it worse because they subject the skin to heat, moisture, and friction. Mitigate these issues by always wearing a clean mask and laundering reusable ones with a fragrance-free hypoallergenic detergent. And skip the makeup. Nobody will see it, and it can cause clogged pores. Stick to a routine. Be diligent about washing your face every morning and night to remove dirt, debris, bacteria, and oil that could clog pores. Stick with a gentle cleanser and avoid harsh chemical ingredients that can cause irritation and overstrip your skin's natural oils, both of which can exacerbate acne, Dr. Masick says. Look for a hypoallergenic, fragrance-free cleanser with the words non-comedogenic, gentle, or for acne-prone skin on the label. Moisturize once a day. Use a hypoallergenic, non-comedogenic product, such as a moisturizing lotion, to quench your skin's thirst without worsening acne. Minimize stress. Studies find that women with acne are more likely to have stressful lives or jobs than women without pimples, so make it a priority to engage regularly in activities that relax you. And when it comes to soothing yourself with comfort foods, avoid reaching for ones high in fat, dairy products, or sugar. Multiple studies link acne breakouts with high glycemic foods like these, which the body quickly converts to glucose, an acne provoker. Treat it. Be patient with pimples. Never pop a pimple. That can lead to scarring and let bacteria enter the skin, which could result in an infection. Allow pimples to resolve on their own, and take steps to prevent them. You can try an over-the-counter cleanser containing benzoyl peroxide or salicylic acid to kill bacteria and prevent the formation of blackheads and whiteheads. Your doctor may also prescribe a topical antibiotic. Target inflammation. Topical retinoids like adapalene, Differin, available over-the-counter, and tretinoin, Retin-A, Renova, available by prescription, deal with acne by reducing inflammation, treating existing blackheads and whiteheads, and preventing the formation of new ones. See a doctor. To get rid of large pimples quickly, a dermatologist can inject them with a small amount of steroid, says Silvina Puglisi, MD, a clinical assistant professor of dermatology at Stanford University. We have come to the end of our program. I have been reading Women's Health. You can hear Women's Health Wednesday morning at 6 and Tuesday evening at 6. I'm Panay McBride, and this has been a production of Sight into Sound Radio, Houston, Texas.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, USA Today, followed by the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American at 3.
This is a Recording Library of West Texas Community Update.
Grocery store hours during coronavirus. United Supermarket, 6 a.m. to 11 p.m. For shoppers 60 plus, 7 to 9 a.m. Monday and Thursday. For shoppers 60 plus, 7 to 9 a.m. Tuesday and Thursday. H-E-B, 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Customers 60 plus. Orders can be called in 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at 833-397-0080. Groceries will be delivered by Favor Delivery. For more information, go to newsroom.heb.com. Market Street, 6 a.m. to midnight. For shoppers 60 plus, 7 to 9 a.m. Monday and Thursday. Walmart, 7 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. 7 to 8 a.m. curbside delivery pickup for first responders and customers 60 plus with disabilities or at risk.
Of all the interesting places in our country, the American West may just have the most interesting stories. Recording Library of West Texas volunteer Jack reads articles from Range, American Cowboy, and other publications on the Western Magazine Hour, Wednesday mornings at 11 and again Sunday afternoons at 5 on Recording Library of West Texas Radio. Read by listening.
To bring us up to time for our next regularly scheduled program, we now bring you the following informative feature.
To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Washing hands with soap. Dear Dr. Roach, we are often instructed to wash our hands with soap. What kind of soap? Does it need to be antibacterial? What about soaps that are sodium lauryl sulfate free? Answer. I do not recommend antibacterial soaps. The evidence shows they are no better than any other soap. They may also increase resistance, not only to the antibacterial agent in the soap, but to other antibiotics as well. Hence, the Food and Drug Administration removed the most commonly used antibacterial agents from most soaps and body washes in 2016. Regular soap is very effective at removing bacteria and viruses from the hands through a mixture of washing them away and the action of the soap on the germs themselves. Some germs, such as the